Hey, Link here. Thanks for joining me for episode 75, where I speak with both Adi Sorli and Seth Fulkerson, who are both working on Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore. We talk about the staples, such as how both Adi and Seth got into the industry, and some words of wisdom they can share, their favorite video games, games they don't think got enough credit, and what makes gaming enjoyable to them. We also talk about the upcoming Arzette, why they enjoy the CDI, and bad old movies. Before we get started, don't forget there are links in the episode description that you can follow to learn more about Seth and Adi, Arzette and Limited Run, as well as the podcast. Also, don't forget to like and share the episode, and without further ado, enjoy episode 75. Hi, and welcome to the Red Tunic Podcast, a podcast where I look to rediscover what makes gaming fun and enjoyable by having positive conversations with those related to the industry. My name is Link, and today I'm joined by Seth Fulkerson and Adi Sorli, working on Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore, being published by Limited Run Games. Adi, Seth, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, too.
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. It's a Friday for me before a long weekend. It's a Canadian Thanksgiving. So right. I'm doing good.
I am also up in I'm up in Montreal, so I will be enjoying the festivities of Thanksgiving.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I didn't know that. So congratulations. I hope you enjoy the long weekend. I don't know why I was saying congratulations.
Congratulations.
I hope you also enjoy the long weekend.
I never take Canadian holidays. due to my office being in North Carolina, and I'm not from Canada originally. I'm from Norway, so I just eat the food in whichever continent I'm on, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And also, I don't mean this in any negative way, but that makes sense. I did not place a Montreal accent with you. So that's also why I was a little shocked.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The Quebecois and then English mixed with it has a certain sound to it. It's very charming, though. I do love Montreal, so.
Well, that's great to hear. So before we get started, then, and this one's going to be a little weird just because there's no real way that I can work this question into better accommodating two guests at once. So I guess, Seth, how about we start with you first? And do you mind telling me and anyone listening a little bit about yourself? And maybe, you know, you might surprise Adi with something as well that he doesn't know.
Okay. I'm Seth. I'm a game developer.
You're a game developer?
Working on Arzette. Well, now I am, yeah. For a long time, I wasn't. Surprised.
I did not know that.
You pegged me as that, I gotta say. I was in the mortgage industry for almost a decade before, so, you know, really natural career transition. I'm from Kentucky, as you can tell by the accent. I am not celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving, but it sure sounds nice. I like food, so, I don't know what else you want to know about me. I like retro gaming and making games based on CDI. So that's me.
Well, awesome. Thank you for sharing that. We'll get to that game based on the CDI in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Adi, you know, the same question basically for you, if you don't mind, you know, telling me and anyone listening, and also, you know, Seth, maybe something shockingly new about yourself and what you do. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I am a game producer who have been working in the industry since 2001, I think now. 2001, yeah. Around the world. And I also work with a group called Digital Foundry. So you might have seen me on DF Retro and things like that. So yeah, don't know what else to say, really, without it sounding too self-indulgent.
You're the Forrest Gump of gaming.
I'm the Forrest Gump of gaming. This came about because there are so many pictures of me at kind of vital gaming moments, which I was not aware of myself, even just in the background or something. So that was a nickname given to me.
Well, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong being considered the Forrest Gump of gaming. You know, like I've been listening to John Romero's I can't remember the name of his book, his autobiography, talking about, you know, everything that, you know, his life and everything, and mm-hmm. hearing about all of the other developers that he knew or knows, and, you know, himself, how all of them seem to be placed in like the kind of Forrest Gump setup. It's always amusing to me when you find or talk to people that are like that, just because, like, you know, in that moment, you probably had no idea you were standing in a setup that was going to, you know, 10, 15 years down the line, pop off into something, right? So I imagine it's at least amusing, even if it is just kind of like a joke of a nickname, or maybe it's not a joke of a nickname, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
For sure, yeah. And you gotta remember also that the gaming industry, especially in the early 2000s, kind of when I started breaking in, it was an extremely small industry within itself. It's a gigantic industry from a consumer standpoint, but still to this day, game development, it's a fairly small group of people. Some companies are bigger and work on specific things, but creatives and things like that, it's a pretty small group of people that kind of are destined to cross paths, whether or not they know it or not. So it's not too surprising when you've been around for a few years that you pop up in a picture in the background eating a hot dog.
I can't wait for the film adaptation myself. So
yeah. Are you going to play me?
Oh, it would be an honor.
Okay.
So, Audie, you know, that makes perfect sense what you're saying, and I understand completely. I think many other people will as well, just because, like you said, it is a lot smaller than you think it would be, or than it was, especially.
Oh yeah, I mean, I came out of I didn't work much in the Norwegian game development, but my first job was with Funcom in Oslo, and only this year I went to Gamescom. And I met someone that remembered when I was an intern there, and he had worked there as an artist. And it's just kind of, it's such a small world that you still kind of bump into each other like this. Because 20 years on, just remembering me in, you know, the hallway like that doesn't seem, you know, if you work in movies and stuff, I don't know how often that happens. But in games, it was just kind of natural. We were just like, hey, I remember you. It's like, yeah, Funcom, right? It's like, yeah, we'd seen each other maybe twice.
So yeah, exactly, you know. So yeah, thank you for sharing that little bit about your past, Seth as well, for sharing yours a few moments ago. Now this one, I'm gonna do my best to wrap this question to something that both of you can have some input on. So Seth, can you maybe talk a little bit about the game, the project that you're working on, Arzet, the Jewel of Faramore, that is inspired by, you know, some CDI games, some cursed CDI games, if you will?
Oh, they're not that cursed. in all seriousness, the project sort of came about because I saw like potential in those games that are derided. I mean, rightfully so. They're not like extremely good games, but there's a spark there, right? Mm. Adi, I steal his answer all the time, because it really encapsulates how I feel about it. Like the early 90s, like sort of FMV, like movement, it just held like a dream for gaming that sort of didn't like come to fruition, right? Like gaming went in like an entirely different direction. And I sort of wanted to channel some of that, like, early possibility mixed with just sort of really classic solid retro platforming. That's sort of what Arzet is. It's definitely inspired by those games, both in aesthetic and otherwise, and game and general gameplay loop, but just making sure the game is solid and sort of just channeling the what if of what it could be, rather than, you know, the bad parts on purpose.
And You know, I mentioned this too when we spoke at PAX after I, or as I tried it or what have you, that, you know, for anyone that's listening and, you know, has only seen like a video or two or what have you, the game felt like very much like the peak of that era of like those kind of platformers. Like it felt like a very polished and good version of the kind of games that like you would be playing, the platform games you'd be playing on, like the Super Nintendo ones with the larger sprites, or the ones that maybe didn't make it to consoles but were like on computer and still had to launch mm-hmm. through DOS or what have you. And I was really blown away about just how the look and feel of the era was spot on, but the gameplay feel was just so good. Like it, you know, I can't really put it into words, but you know, it, or I can't properly put it into words, but it just felt so good how good it felt. And like, I know that's, I'm saying like the same word a few times and it's kind of redundant. It's just, I say it this way and I don't mean any offense to it, just because like when you hear the inspiration it's coming from, you kind of immediately have an idea of what it might be like. In the mm-hmm. same way that when someone's like, I'm making a Nintendo, like a NES game or like a NES inspired game or what have you, you immediately yeah. see it playing. You're like, oh, I know how this is going to feel. I know how this is going to work. And, you know, going in, you know, the bias that I had going in when I tried it at PAX, it absolutely shattered whatever ceiling that bias went to. Mm-hmm. So like, nothing but praise from the demo that I played is really the short and long of how I should be putting all this. Is like, it was absolutely, you know, I'm really looking forward to it because it was just so so good. It worked. It played so good. I'm sorry, I've said a lot of things, some of which can be accidentally taken as like some weird insult, and I apologize.
No,
that.
Not at all.
But,
go on. It comes with the nature of this game, right? Because the inspiration comes from. Kind of take, like Seth said, we took inspiration from product that didn't achieve what it set out to do, and is mostly known for that. So the challenge from our side as well, developing it and marketing it, is how do you exceed those expectations? Mm-hmm. Because aesthetically, we are channeling something that people immediately recognize as not good, failed, things like this. But that's the kind of interesting twist on it too. I think that's what makes a lot of people interested like you, and I'm very happy with the things you said actually, because that immediate reaction to like picking up the controller and feeling it being a good game, that's where a lot of our excitement comes from, I think, in our gameplay mechanics and our gameplay loop, because you're going to go in with this preconceived notion, regardless of how happy you are with it, you're still going to be thinking about those games that it's based on, be kind of like, how is this going to play out? And it's really exciting from a development standpoint to be able to go to that sort of place and say, like, everyone thinks this is going to be bad, so how can I subvert those expectations by making it really good? Mm-hmm. Because when you're making like a 3D action game these days and whatnot, you know, you're standing there with giants and people have much higher expectations probably than what they should have for general product. But for us, I think it couldn't be lower based on what it's based on. So it's an interesting challenge, but it's also a really neat benefit to us.
Yes.
So Adi, just to kind of follow up on that, a few things. The first is, I don't know if that's the best way to pitch your game with, you know, expectations are going to be low, so we're already ahead, but, you know, I understand it. And like I said, you know, and I think many others as well, they'll go in with like the expectation it'll be something like, you know, some of those older, jankier games, and immediately do what I did and go, oh, wow, this is 100%. Like, I'm just so well crafted, so good. But I am curious, you know, from the limited run side of things, I don't know how much you can speak to this, just, you know, for understandable reasons. However, when, you know, I don't know if Seth maybe went to you guys or you guys saw it or what have you, but like, from your perspective, how is it that you guys saw something like this and went, oh, this is a thing we want to take a chance on? And I know that saying it that way has some negative connotations. It's not intended. I don't have a better way off the top of my head to say it.
Oh, no worries at all. No, because, I mean, that's an interesting story. And you kind of have to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the genesis of this whole project comes from Seth having done the remasters of the Zelda CDI games. He put them out 2020, was it? 2019? Yep. Yeah.
2020. It's almost been 3 years next month.
Right. And at the time, I was, you know, as I still am, active with Digital Foundry. And on Digital Foundry, people associate me very heavily with CDI stuff because I collect CDI and I find it's a very interesting era of gaming. And so Seth came on my radar because he put those remasters out. We tried them out and they were fantastic. And they were fantastic in a way that I think a lot of people wouldn't realize. But from my standpoint, having already been a game producer for so long, the fact that he had been able to pinpoint the mechanics both on the CDI level and recreate those to be fairly accurate, but also enhance them from that standpoint, not just take assets and make an entirely new game which feels different and plays different, but kind of looks the same. Because a lot of remakes, fan remakes especially, are that. They are either aesthetically the same or mechanically the same, but very seldomly are they both, but then also enhanced based on that blueprint. So I was very impressed, just from a technical standpoint, what Seth had done with those remasters. And so we started talking via Twitter, kind of like, yeah, this is very impressive. Thanks, so, you know, thanks for putting these out. And it turned out that Seth was a big fan of our show. So we had already, yeah, still am, despite working with me. you know, he was a big fan of ours and kind of was like, hey, this is awesome. I'm so happy to hear from you. And just kind of, you know, started conversations. And it wasn't too long after that that I think I kind of just asked you, Seth. But it was kind of like, what do you think of doing a new game that's not based on Zelda, but kind of based on this idea or this kind of template? Either you brought it up or I kind of brought up the idea, but you already, the important part was that when that was brought up, you already had planned it out and you had kind of the beginnings of the idea. You had a lot of the framework for the story laid out, the characters laid out, and also kind of like, hey, if I'm going to do this, I would really want to improve on this. I would want to do this. And again, I was just impressed. It was kind of like you had laid it out in the way that I worked with developers that have been around for 15 years making games who don't have half of the preparation that you had done for this game. So it's just kind of like, wow, okay. You know, if you want to, I could help you out, but no pressure. Of course, like if you think I'm a doofus or something, don't worry about it. But if you want me to come in on the producing side and writing side, kind of, you know, let me know and I'll do it. You know, I have faith that you're actually going to put something out here. And that was kind of the beginnings of it, because you were like, yeah, absolutely. If you want to join it in on this, I'll do it. And so we started together just kind of laying it out. And Limited Run wasn't the first pitch that we did. I didn't work for Limited Run at the time when we started this. I joined Limited Run in 2022. And prior to this, we had made some vertical slices and we had kind of put it in front of other companies in various states. And as you would expect, I both Seth and I don't think have any issues with this. People were skeptical when they saw it.
Yeah.
And would be kind of like, so you're pitching a game that's based on Zelda CDI games. And you want us to fund this? Why? It's like, well, because we're going to make them better. And it's like, who's asking for this? And it's like, I don't know. Me?
Evidently a lot of people, by the way. But
yeah, now we can kind of chuckle about it and say, like, told you so. Because obviously we knew from just what we were going to do with the game. You know, we always likened it to something like a Monster Boy or like a Wonder Boy type of game now. Where, like, well, what Zelda CDI tried to be was a sprawling, sort of open-ended adventure with a very colorful cast that were fully voiced, which was, by 1993, not common. And it had animations, it had fully painted backgrounds, it had all these very neat technical things, because generally a game would be based on tiles, which would repeat, but a full bitmap painting meant that every step you took is a unique step. Doesn't work in execution of the CDI due to how that technology works, but we can make it work today. So it was all these kind of exciting things where it's like, we can take every idea they had and hold it up with respect and say, it works. You just need to implement it 25 years later. Very different. So how we got the limited run was basically after kind of being turned down a few times. I always mention this to make Seth feel really guilty and behold to me, but I give Seth some money.
I usually mention that.
But yeah, you also mention it. I mean, it's contractual. King. Yeah. I had given Seth some of my own money from savings and just said, like, regardless of what happens, and I really meant it. I mean,
I know.
You know, regardless of what happens, even if I cannot be part of this project anymore because it just never goes anywhere, or if I get too busy or whatever happens, take this money and actually make a demo. Because one of the things we had both very much been aware of was that that original vertical slice was very primitive from a visual standpoint. And all of our ideas were in there, especially, you know, mostly Seth's ideas, because he's the one with the good ideas. But, like, it worked. But it didn't look like it worked, if you know what I mean. So I was like, go get the assets, go get some animation, go get some sprites, and just have a demo. That's all I want. If that's the only thing we get out of this, it's money well spent anyway. And again, Seth just got the perfect people, got it made real quick, and I couldn't believe it personally what he actually got out of that. So that demo was superb, and yeah, it just so happened that Limited Run hired me, and I told Seth as soon as I was hired, I was like, I'm gonna be at their offices on this date. I think they'll find out very quickly who I am and why I shouldn't be there, so you should come on day one. And that was basically verbatim what I said. It's like, you should be there as quickly as possible, because I'll make sure I pitch your game before any other and my chances are lost. And Seth flew down on my very first day at Limited Run. We sat down with my boss, Josh. And I think for Seth, this must have been kind of almost like being in a dream. Because we sat down and he turned the demo on, and immediately Josh was like, oh wow, are you making a Zelda CDI game? And we're kind of hesitant now because we had heard that so many times. It's like, yes. And he's like, oh, I love it. It's like, why has no one else done this? And then as soon as Seth played off the first animation, Josh just turned to Seth and was like, we'll do it. You know, why wouldn't we do this? This looks awesome. Like, he could also, you know, Josh is the type of person that also understands how much these projects mean to people, also for the developer as much as the consumer. So I think he understood also that, like, for Seth, this was a way to fill something that he really wanted to do. So it was just kind of a fun journey to be part of, regardless of how the game does. And yeah, that's kind of how it got signed to Limited Run. It's a bit of a long story, I'm sorry, but
I think it's a great story.
So, and it was, you know, from that point on, it was really off to the races. I mean, it's been ongoing nonstop since that day.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing that story. And, you know, it's not too long of a story. I wouldn't, you know, don't worry about that aspect of it. You know, it was everything it needed to be. And thank you for sharing everything, because that's really amusing, just the number of steps in between, you know, like coming from the Zelda CDI remasters to, you know, the kind of, I'm going to put this in air quotes because I don't know the right word, but like the duo quests that you had to try and put this out or what have you, all the way to your first day at Limited Run, feeling like you're not going to make it much longer and you need to get this in front of someone's eyes right away.
Basically.
Which, you know, it's just fantastic here. And it sounds like, it sounds like you're no longer worried about them figuring out you don't belong there, seeing as you brought them this thing that you have both learned since then, a lot of people have been waiting for, right?
I mean, I'm still who I am. So, you know, there's many reasons.
Time.
Yeah. But for our set, I think they've been certainly quite happy with the response, we'll say. And I don't think they ever regretted taking this chance.
So then that's absolutely fantastic to hear. And now, Seth, I am curious though, how is it you went from working in mortgage, as you mentioned, I don't know if it was at the beginning of this or before we started recording.
Yep.
Those times kind of blend in my brain, sorry. But, you know, how did you go from working in mortgage for several years to making the Zelda CDI remasters to working on RZ? Well, you know, the steps between Zelda and RZ, I think Adi covered well enough there. However, but like, how did you go from mortgage to making game?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been a hobbyist developer since I was like 12, right? Like, that's when I started using Game Maker, like, 6 back in 2004 or 2005, and you know, I'd always been into game development because my whole thing is, if I like something, if I like movies or art or something, I want to make my own version. That's kind of like always been my deal. So I've always been like, you know, I'd play something, or I mean, I had a VHS camcorder where I made home movies that will never be seen by anybody. But like, you know, any time that I like something, I want to make my own version. Anyway, for years I've been making smaller hobby projects. The CDI remasters was my, I need to get a larger scale project done challenge. I worked on them part time in my spare time over the course of 4 years, you know, because I worked full time at the bank. And I'm just going to call it the bank, by the way. I don't want to. But I worked on them sort of part time. A lot of stops and starts. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to go through with it. The genesis of the idea was, you know, Twilight Princess HD had come out, and my friends and I were joking, well, what if that existed but for the Zelda CDI games, right? So, you know, going with that ha-ha funny joke, I, you know, I scoped it out, like Adi knows now. Every time I do a project, I immediately overscope everything out in exact and excruciating detail, which is really annoying for everybody. But, and I was like, well, I think I might be able to do this. I underestimated it. It was actually a very, very big challenge. But in the course of doing it, I learned the story behind the games. I read the excellent Hardcore Gaming 101 interviews with the original director, Dale Deschiron. And I was really inspired by what they had tried to do, but kind of couldn't accomplish due to, you know, their circumstances out of their control. So, you know, I was like, well, I want to make sure this is like actually really well done. These remasters are. So I did. And you know, like I said, lots of stops and starts. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to finish them. Because again, in my mind, I was like, this is for a dozen of my really weird niche internet friends and me. This isn't really for anybody. Nobody will care about this because nobody, I didn't think anybody liked those games in the way that I like them. and I was wrong. I did end up finishing them through just stubbornness mostly. And yeah, it blew up. I met Audi, and I immediately, you know, he mentioned, I had the idea to do a spiritual successor even before I had finished the remasters. I had sort of kicked around the idea with friends, because I'm really lucky to be friends with a lot of professional artists and animators. We sort of all came from the same sort of like art type community. And, you know, we had always talked like, you know, we love those games. Like, it would be really fun if we could work together on something like that. And so I thought about it for a long time. So it was just this perfect marriage of that. And then, you know, talking to Audie and me admitting I needed writing help. And, you know, and then he was like, oh, by the way, I'm a game producer. And you know, he started talking about all that he already mentioned. But I still was working on RZ part-time for a long time before I had had the meeting with Limited Run. And once again, fate sort of came around, and I got laid off from the bank after almost 10 years. And it was sort of like a do or die moment for me. I was like, okay, am I going to pursue indie game development full time now? Now that, you know, things are coming together, or, you know, am I going to do something else? And I decided to do indie game development, and I guess we will see how that turns out going forward, but I'm feeling very confident in it. But yeah, that's sort of how it happened.
So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, it's fantastic to hear like that you had like a bunch of people kind of already around you that when opportunity struck, you were able to kind of just be like, oh yeah, I have this. And, you know, like mm-hmm. Jimmy, John, Jessica, let's go kind of thing. You know, it's always great to hear, that works out. 'Cause I know, you know, sometimes you're in a great opportunity and it comes to you, but it's, you know, I'll use an even easier analogy, but it's like, you know, a job opportunity comes on, but you have to, it's like an hour and a half away. And it's like, well, you don't have a car. So like, you can't, you know, you can't take it. You can't drive there. Right. So like, you know, it's always great when opportunity comes knocking and everything is already, you know, lined up for you. Right.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, for sure. I'm very lucky. I'm very grateful to be doing, you know, what I'm doing. But yeah, I was lucky to have all my friends able to help me. I mean, working with your friends makes a project so much better. Now, I'm working with a variety of artists and animators, but I would say most of them are my friends that are working on it. But again, I'm really lucky to be able to sort of not only make this game like the way that I think that it should be made and the way that, you know, Audie, you know, would sort of keep the vision in mind, but to also be able to do it with a lot of other people who love, like, who want to make this game as badly as I do. Like, I really think that that sort of shows through in the game itself.
So, yeah. So, you know, thank you for sharing that as well. And the only thing I had to follow up from that is, or this is, you know, based on your experiences, do you have any words of wisdom that you might be able to share? And, you know, I imagine getting laid off from the bank is probably not one of them, but in your case, it might actually be. I just don't know if that one itself would be helpful for other people. So you can gloss over that one if you'd like.
I don't know if I'm qualified to give words of wisdom quite yet. but, yeah, I saw that opportunity and I was like, well, you know, even if, kind of like what Audie alluded to, even if the project somehow goes south, which it is not, I wanted to do it. Like, I wanted to make this game. I wanted to make it the way that I think that it should be made, that everybody, you know, I wanted to make the game. And, if I didn't get that opportunity again, then, you know, I'd kick myself, right? Like, so I figured it was worth, you know, doing the scary thing and taking on the risk of making it.
So, you know, thank you for that. 'Cause that's, you know, I think that's great advice in general, that sometimes you just gotta take that chance when it arises, right? And like, you know, in your scenario, it wasn't like you were told, hey, quit your job and do this full time, the world kind of said, hey, you don't have anything else to do. Would you like to try this? So, you know, in similar situations, I think that's great advice to say, just take the chance, right?
Yeah. And I think the only other one I could give is that I'm qualified for is it really like, so this game is for me, right? Like I am making it like it appeals to me and I am passionate about it. I think that if somebody is going to make like a game like independently like this and they have the degree of control and everything that I do, then that should be like paramount, right? Like I didn't go into doing this like for money, basically. Like I did this because I want to make this game, and I would advise people to try and like sort of go for that path rather than like, yeah.
So thank you again for that, and that makes perfect sense as well, right? Like it was a previous guest that said, if you are getting into this industry to make money, you're already doing it wrong, right? You should be getting into doing it because it's what you want to do. You're passionate about it. And, you know, I know that that is sometimes a really kind of like waffly thing to say to people, but, you know, because in the sense of, you know, like, got to eat, you got bills to pay, right? But at the same time, it's more meaning like, how I interpret it is meaning like, you know, don't, if you think you're going to get into this and you're going to get rich, you're already doing it wrong. Like that's how I interpret that one is that, you know, like do what you want to do, but like, don't, you know, do it because that's what you want to do, not because it's, you know, you expect to get rich or whatever. That was a really bad and what have you on my part. I'm sorry.
You're good.
So Adi, I have a similar question to you because, yeah. You know, you had mentioned before, you know, you were a journalist and now then a game producer. I think, you know, journalist might be an air quotes kind of thing, depending on the seriousness of it. Sorry, hardball, quote unquote, journalist is how we should phrase it.
Yeah, never much one of those. it was kind of during even when working in video games that I dabbled in that because I started as an intern, and then after that, I always joke that my first day in the video game studio, I saw everything I didn't want to do, and I knew I never wanted to work anywhere else. Because I kind of managed to look and survey kind of what game development was firsthand, and then see where I would become an asset rather than an obstacle. And generally, that's how I look at most of my life, is just trying to figure out where I will be an obstacle and not be there, which is most places. And while I was working on smaller projects, and mostly when I started out, I dabbled a lot in production of music and audio, because I was really into video game music. I was really into sound design. So I was always kind of working on these smaller games, like, you know, back in the 2000s, they were Newgrounds stuff, this kind of nonsense. And that eventually transitioned into writing about it. So I did write for places like Destructoid and whatnot as a games journalist. But yeah, what was the question?
So the question was leading into how you got from point A to point B, with point B being a producer or what have you at Limited Run.
Yeah, I mean, that's in my case, it's a little bit of a complicated answer because I did a lot of missteps. I didn't listen to my parents and I didn't do what I should do. And I wasn't very good at school. So there's all these things I wouldn't say are necessarily advice to people. But if I can take anything out of that, it was persistence, right? Because I came from a really small town in Norway. And I mean, it was 300 people there and everyone knew everyone. And it just felt very safe. It felt very convenient and was everything I didn't want. I wanted to go out and kind of seek the world and see things I was supposed to see and wasn't supposed to see and all this nonsense. And yeah, in a way, I think my life experience fueled a lot of my entry to the video games industry, because I was someone that just kind of traveled and took every, if I saw an opportunity, I'd take it, you know, and not maliciously, but just kind of like, if I saw it was something I could do and do okay, didn't need to be an expert on it, but if I just saw it was something I could do, I kind of took the opportunity and said, like, I can do that. And generally, it was a lot of things to do with production. It was kind of getting things together to actually happen and get the logistics, get budgets, all these things kind of sorted out so that other people could actually do the creative stuff and accomplish what they wanted to do. Because that's something where I always felt like I was fairly good at, was just kind of keeping ships together. So, what was the question again?
You know, I think I'm trying to think of how to bounce it again off that. But you know, I think we're good. I think, you know,
I got the limited run.
Yeah, how are you a lead producer at limited run, Poppy?
I was about to try and like wrap something up.
So,
but thank you, Seth.
Yeah, so I mean, eventually I started getting kind of real offers from bigger companies. I did a few stints with Square Enix Japan, and things like this based on my knowledge of video game music, game history, all this kind of stuff. And so I worked in the industry kind of professionally since 2007. And it led into was a group of friends of mine that started their own company to localize and produce Japanese games and put them out in the West, which fit, you know, my criteria. So I started as a producer there and started producing a lot of games. And then Limited Run came on my radar because when I was working for the Japanese company, they wanted to eventually expand into doing Japanese games. Got to remember, when Limited Run started, they were mostly, I mean, they did their own games first, and then they started signing up third parties, like Apes Odyssey, Oddworld, things like that. But they wanted to do some Japanese games because it felt like, you know, the next step for them. And I was someone that was dealing with Japanese games, but was from the West. And so I think it was convenient for them to kind of talk to me about some of them. And so I did some games via Limited Run as, you know, for that other developer at first. And then I started helping out with some project at Limited Run just as a consultant or just as a friend, really, to the company and helping them get licenses that I was now involved with. And so it just naturally over time, as my career and my time with the other company kind of came to an end, and just seeking new adventures and new possibilities, Limited Run was pretty high on that list because they reached out to me when they found out that my contract was up and just kind of, hey, you know, we've known each other for so long, would it feel natural to kind of come over here and be here officially? And it was like, yeah, I think that would be fun.
So thank you for that. And, you know, I earlier you had mentioned like your words of wisdom was to kind of take the opportunities that arise. So I'm not going to try and reiterate that, which I think is, excuse me for one second. Sorry about that. Which I think, you know, taking the opportunities as they come up, I think that's just great because, you know, you like if you're there and it seems like it's going to work for you and you're in a position to, you know, it makes sense. Right. So I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to bug you again for that one. I think that fits well.
Yeah, I think what Steph said earlier, though, about making games for yourself and kind of adding a little bit to that, if you want to enter the games industry, one thing that's important to remember is that, like, the game, making a game is a miracle, right? Every line of code is basically a miracle that it works. And game shipping is certainly a miracle. People really do not understand how hard it is to create a full software package that holds up from beginning to end, from any standpoint, from a mechanical standpoint, from a UI standpoint. You know, it's extremely hard. It certainly, it takes a long time And it can be hard to keep focused. It can be hard to keep track. And it can be hard to just feel like it's going anywhere. So I think the best advice for indie developers is just create the games you want and realize that for every game that releases, there's probably 5 canceled games or 5 projects that didn't even get off the ground before you started this one. So even if you don't accomplish what you want with each game, there's still very valuable experiences that will lead into eventually the game that you release and that you're happy with.
So thank you for that, because that also is fantastic advice. And it's advice that I've heard or that others have shared in different words or what have you, but how, you know, it's an iterative process. And like, no matter what, it's not truly time lost because you're always going to be getting better. Like what your skills and everything, like you're going to be continuing to grow and stack and, you know, all of that fun stuff. Sorry, I'm not trying to sweep that away. I'm just running out of out of ways to phrase it. But no, but thank you for that advice, because that's, you know, fantastic. Now, here's a question for both of you. And I'm going to throw it out this way. I don't know how this is going to go. Seth, I think yours might be a little more fleshed out. Audi, I don't have any idea. So what I'd like to ask of both of you is, Can you both say what it is you like about the CDI games that made you want to do this? Specifically, the CDI games,
The Zelda CDI games, or the CDI games,
the Zelda one. Sorry. Zelda
one. Because it is like Audie said, there's a lot of ground to cover with that. But go ahead, Audie. I want you to go first, actually.
For Zelda CDI games, well, I've always enjoyed what people call kind of bad movies, bad games. I always loved creativity, and I always loved kind of uncompromised optimism in entertainment. And generally, you know, we sit and laugh at it, and for good reason, if you watch bad movies like Samurai Cop and whatnot, there's good reason to laugh. It's someone's dream dying on screen. There's a Schadenfreude aspect to it. But for me, with the Zelda CDI games, I used to write for a website called Hardcore Gaming 101, and there was someone there that did an interview with the creator of the Zelda CDI games, like kind of lead architect of them. And I've always felt, also playing through them and looking at them, that, man, there's a lot of interesting aspects here, right? I went through some of them earlier, but it was like the fact that the whole cast is voiced, the fact that every background is hand-painted, the fact that for a Zelda game, it's slightly open-ended, and just seeing kind of like this creativity bubbling under a technical ceiling that it just cannot break through. The CDI just, on a technical level, cannot handle a game like this. But it almost does, from just ingenuity on their side. So that's why I always felt they're a little bit... I think if you just look at the cutscenes, which are cheesy, and their voice acting is kind of all over the place, and yeah, I mean, they are what they are. But if you look at the whole game as in its context, in its era, when it came out, they weren't even... I was alive at the time, and I saw them at the electronics boutiques. And I mean, when we looked at them then, they were incredibly interesting and not at all as derided as they became to be on YouTube. So I think I always just saw the potential in them to maybe... There's something there, right? And if you play it enough, maybe you find it. Probably not. But if you can actually get another chance at making something based on this blueprint, what, where could you go with that? That was kind of the reasons why we played those CDI games and got to the conclusion we did.
And contemporary reviews were also high, by the way. I mean, if you and look at those, at the reviews of the Solus, and yeah, they're actually pretty good. So
I mean, for the CDI, they're incredible, right?
Yes.
Generally, your experience on CDI, you know, I collect CDI and I love it, but I love it for all the wrong reasons. And those games are not even close to being the worst you get on a console, not even in the same realm. Because these games, when held up to, Super Nintendo game and whatnot, the controls are not responsive and this and that. But the music, the art direction, the clarity of the sound and video, it's doing things that other consoles at the time, and even into the PlayStation era, could not do as well.
Yep. So, you know, thank you for that. And like, I'm trying, like, for me, I've only been able to go off of the YouTube, you know, or I shouldn't say YouTube, but like the more modern views on the CDI games. And I only say that because, you know, at the time, and probably even now, given the maybe scarcity of them, I definitely was not a child that would have had the ability to ask a parent to buy, you know, the CDX. If I remember correctly, it was a very expensive thing back then.
Yeah. It wasn't also a game console. You know, that's another thing about it, was like the CDI was marketed as this entertainment hub. If you look at how it was promoted, and that's also the reason why I'm telling you this, is the price point that you brought up. You know, the gaming aspect of it was secondary, which is why the games are sort of what they are. But if we look at the promotion of the CDI back then, it has a lot of parallels to what you would see with the Xbox One reveal, and how, like, the Xbox, if you remember, like, when the Xbox One came out, it was going to be this hub, and it was going to be all-in-one entertainment box and this, that. Gaming was almost secondary, and it's interesting to see how there's some overlap in the approach there. But the CDI, for what it's worth, you know, in 1991, when it originally kind of came to the full market, incredibly impressive what you could do on it.
So, you know, thank you for putting that into perspective, because I think that's something that's easily lost when we look at it through the lens of what we kind of know it as now, right? So thank you for that. And, you know, Seth, a similar question to you. What was it, you know, what was it, what is it that you like about those Zelda CDI games? And I know that I, you know, as Adi kind of, when he was explaining it, he kind of touched on things that he had already said. So I apologize, you know, if some of this is just you retreading. But yeah, like, what was it about those games that made you go, oh, wow, this is cool. This is something I really like.
Yeah, I think he touched on a lot of the similar aspects, just the sort of how, especially for the time, what those games were doing was just really, you know, it's kind of genuinely impressive, like the quality of the video that you were getting, especially in Europe, because they were able to use SCART and RGB, but don't want to get into all that right now. But and the CD quality audio, and the video being sort of like bitmaps instead of video compression. It was really like, it was really high quality. And I mean, even later on, when the CDI had a video capability with the digital video cartridge, I would say that its video quality was even superior to a lot of the consoles like PlayStation. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm probably just going to reiterate everything Adi said, but that's sort of exactly what I saw in those games as well. And yeah, like, I love bad, you know, bad games and movies and stuff, and that's another reason why Adi and I hit it off so well. But and I like that sort of passion that people like pour into projects like the Zelda CDI games, because if you read those interviews with Dale Deschamps, the director, you know, he started on the Commodore 64, and his work there was, he did Below the Root and a bunch of other like formative titles.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yep. And he, this was sort of like a culmination of a lot of his design ideas that he had had for a long time. I mean, like, even in those interviews, like, he'll tell you, like, you know, I knew what would be best for this hardware, and we're going to try to go a little beyond that. But also, they were given a year and, like, $500,000 per game, and to put two games out at the same time. So, I mean, you know, they can only do so much on the hardware as well, which has no video acceleration, by the way. It's all done on software. It's a completely software-based, somewhat scrolling game that's limited in so many ways, but just seeing what they were trying to accomplish and taking those elements and really like making it you know, our own, and also like exploring it to its best potential. This is really what we wanted to do with RZ and why I found those games so appealing.
So, you know, thank you for that, for you know, adding on and tagging on, sorry, I don't know the best way to put it, for how to phrase all of that. But, you know, thank you for sharing that. And like, that's really interesting to point out, like, the quality difference and the, you know, that it didn't suffer from the same like video compression issues. 'Cause that's, you know, an important, like, that's a key factor thing. That's a weird way to phrase it. But that's like an important thing to note, because because back then, with like anything that was doing video was going to be suffering greatly because of just the like how things just worked then, right?
So, oh yeah, I mean, we didn't have hardware and codecs at the time to really play off video the way we can now. Now we can watch, you know, 8K on your computer, like, the, you know, you have YouTube, you have streaming, but data streaming and codec decompression routines by 1991 to even, you know, I'd say late 90s, was not very well established in the video game industry.
So yeah, so that's, thank you. You've done a much better job encapsulating why that was important. So thank you for picking up my slack. Now, Adi, Seth, I realize I have not done a good job at asking other questions. Focus was a lot on CDI related stuff, as well as your project, and that I'm not apologizing for. That's an important thing to talk about, especially in this scenario. However, you know, Adi, you mentioned a little earlier that you didn't have a lot of time. You would have to be, you know, getting out the door. So I'm going to try and hit both of you with some lightning round questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, take your time. I mean, we're done where we're done, right?
Yep.
So,
that's what I say about life, so.
Yeah, could you not say that about your game development, by the way? I'd like to get it out soon.
So, you know, both of you have expressed enjoying older movies or bad older movies or not well received, like, right, however you want to phrase that. I'm wondering, have you both come to a consensus about like what some of the ones that you both agree on are bad older movies? I don't know how to phrase this properly, but I'm
our confident you both movies know. Are, or?
There we go. Sure, yeah, there's a way to phrase it.
Yeah. I mean, I have many because I've been collecting bad movies since childhood. But, man.
That's hard off the top of the head, for sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of obscure ones that...
You said if the dog talks, then it's over, right?
Yeah, so that's one bad movie trope that I just cannot... Like, I can't watch them. Is if the dog starts talking with a human voice, I shut it off. It doesn't matter if it's supposed to be good or not. It's just like, nope. That's an instant off. But, you know, to go some more conventional things like Samurai Cop and those kind of movies where the ones that are fun are like when you have to sit there and just ask yourself, like, someone thought this is a good idea and actually made it. That's a hallmark of a great movie. It's just like it has to be a sincerity to it. It can't be, you know, recently there's been a lot of, like, shark movies and things. Maybe it's not that recent. But it was, like, Sharknado and whatnot. But they're made to be bad, and they wink at the camera. And this actually goes into a bit of our set development as well. Was when we started writing it, I told Seth immediately, it's like, it has to be sincere. In no shape or form should our set ever look at the camera and wink and say, you're in on it, right? Mm-hmm. We all know what this is. Like, she has to be confident in herself, and she has to be comfortable in the world she inhabits, and the characters around her just as much. It should never come off as them being odd in their own world.
Yep.
And that's how I look at bad movies as well. It's just kind of like, they have to have this sincerity to it, and they should never wink at the camera. Someone who made this would look you in the eyes and say, like, I made a great movie about a long-haired samurai cop in L.A. Sure. That makes sense. So I think that's kind of the consensus we have on bad movies, is just the sincerity and mm-hmm. the bafflement.
So with that in mind, then, I feel this is an apt question for both of you. The Room, Tommy Wiseau's film. Where and how does that land on your scale? Let's say like 1 to 10 in terms of a bad movie. Because from what I've seen of it and understand, that was a sincere attempt. It was just a horrible sincere attempt, right?
So well, it's like
where it fits for you guys.
Yeah, The Room is interesting because, yeah, absolutely, it's sincere. And it ranks pretty high up there. But it's sort of like a gateway movie or entry movie to the world of bad movies. Because, like, it's completely baffling and whatnot. But once you got the taste for it and start kind of digging in, if you go to, like, a place like Vinegar Syndrome, they put out re-releases. Mm-hmm. Of movies, and sometimes just like completely baffling ones, and it's like you can go so much deeper into that rabbit hole and just find things that makes you question life as it is. So, but The Room is very accessible. I think you can show that to anyone, and it fails on every fundamental level, but there's a sincerity to it.
It's also got the midnight movie kind of run to think through as well at this point. So
right, well, yeah. But just as a movie in itself, I think you can show it to basically anyone. And there are certain expectations in cinema that people have. You know, cinema is an art form that's lived since the 1910s. And so we have over 100 years of experience with it, both from our seats and from making them. So here comes a movie that just like on every single level does not understand those basics at all.
Made
by an alien, yeah. By a vampire. Like, I think that's why people, even if like they aren't into bad movies as a hobby or they watch it every Friday with friends or anything, if you show it to them, they'll still sit down just like, this is not how movies are supposed to operate. This is not how human beings speak. That's not how you throw a football. It's like, it's everything is wrong. So I think that's why people can kind of, anyone can watch that.
So thank you. And, you know, I'm going to take the act on the presumption that both of you are more or less in agreement on all of that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, I'll go. Yeah, mm-hmm. Say that.
So you know, to shift it, you know, a little away from that as well, because I would be remiss, you know, with the structure of, you know, talking with both of you, we've kind of been in different places with the questions that I typically ask. However, I would be remiss if I did not explicitly ask this, and you know, Audie, I'll start with you. What's your favorite video game, like, you know, from your childhood, if it isn't from your childhood, or like what have you, like what was your favorite game, and you know, yeah, why, how, what have you?
No, I've answered this question several times, and it always is the same answer, I would hope. If someone has heard anything else, then put it in the comments, I guess. But Another World, it was an Amiga game that came out in 1992. And it was released in the States as Aladdis World, on Super Nintendo and Genesis, but now Ghost is Another World, which is its original title, and that was a game that just honestly changed my life. I was, see, I would have been like 8 or 9 when it came out, and I was completely stunned that a video game could be this kind of experience. It was a game that didn't have, doesn't have dialogue, doesn't have prompts, doesn't have a high score. It's all based on immersion and experience and instinct. And it plays with you based on those kind of core human ideas. And it's simplistic. Its original version is very simplistic. It's these polygons. It's polygonal and it's shapes and sizes. But from that minimalism came this infinite creativity that you could kind of apply to it, because there's suggestions in this graphics. There's a suggestion of a city in the background or an animal crawling in front of you. So there's these little things that trigger you, that triggers your imagination, and it made the game just feel like endless to me when I was a kid. So that was the video game. And at that point, I knew I wanted to work in video games, was just simply because of Another World. Because I couldn't believe that something could have this impact on me emotionally. So I kind of got inspired by, like, well, I really want to see if I could do something similar. And I could never do it as well as that game did. But it's something that drives me every day, is that I want to have the ability to create stuff that, on some level, affects people positively and emotionally.
So thank you for that answer. And, I haven't had a whole lot of experience with it, but, I've seen it. And, from what you're saying, I understand, because it was a very unique game. And, hearing you talk about what all it also did, or attempted to do, or what have you, is really impressive, right? Like,
made by one guy in 1991. On the Amiga. It's just, to me, it's the greatest game ever made, and it's also the greatest story ever told in video games.
It's really good.
Both in software and in creation. It's just this, it's just this story of, I don't know how to even describe it. It's just a game you have to... It's timeless. So I think if people... I don't want to say too much more. If you haven't played it, yeah, go. It's on Steam. There's the 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary edition. Things like that, which perfectly makes the game playable today. Modern systems. So, and it's just one of those where you turn off the lights, you make sure you have no distractions, and you just... let that game take you wherever it goes. You're going to be frustrated. You're going to be happy. You're going to be confused. But all those things are things you're supposed to feel. So, and it still works. It doesn't matter whether or not it's in 3D or has high fidelity graphics or whatever. It's those core elements that still work. So I definitely suggest everyone try that game out.
So thank you again for that recommendation. I am going to try and get back to it now. I'm going to add it to my backlog based on, you've sold me on it, I guess I should say.
Yeah, good.
Now, Seth, same question, more or less, like your favorite game, whether it was as a kid or what have you. And, what was it that made you like it so much?
Yeah, this is it's a little hard for me to answer, especially because the most cliche answer I can give you is Super Metroid, right? I love science fiction, and I love exploration, and I love really like crafted game design more than anything else, as well as storytelling that's like delivered diegetically, I guess, in game. And that game does it just incredibly well. I also have a preference for sort of like retro games and older games, just because I like newer 3D stuff okay, but I sort of like the simplicity that's sort of inherent to that. And I really think that game is the peak of taking like all of the sort of like design the designs of the era and just pushing it as far as it can go before it inevitably would have to go to like the next generation in order for like exploration and the storytelling to be better. Now, I do love Metroid Prime as well, because it's just that game in 3D to death. Both of those are basically my favorites. But I also love a lot of other weirder games. Audie's going to be shocked to hear this, but like, I love The Longest Journey. it's actually one of my favorites. But I love like visual novels. I love Sonic games. Sonic CD is my favorite one. I know that's a really incorrect opinion to have, but again, if you know me, you know that I love exploration-based games, and that's the most exploration-based Sonic game. But yeah, anything that encourages exploration and has storytelling that's just like really well done is definitely like everything that I love. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess the traditional answer of the day is just Super Metroid.
So, you know, thank you for that. And, you know, I understand how Sonic CD could be seen as the wrong answer. However, you know, I don't think people give Sonic CD as much merit and praise as they should. And I say that as someone who has played it and has always been just amazed at what it delivered, considering how and where, like when it was developed and, you know, the what they were trying to do and all of that, right? Like it's, you know, I don't think it gets enough praise. But then again, I'm not a diehard Sonic fan, so I don't know how taboo it is to say that out loud. So yeah, let's walk from that, I guess. Now, Seth, Audie, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I do want to let you guys get
take your time.
Okay, then. well, if that's the case, you know, I'll steal some more of your time, I guess.
Steal away.
I'll ask this one just because on the topic of Sonic CD and you know, my view of it not getting enough credit, I'm wondering if either of you have some games and maybe you have an agreement on them, seeing as you guys, you know, the Venn diagram of overlapping of things like the, you know, your likes and dislikes in terms of those movies, bad movies and such. So I don't know if there will be an overlap on this one, but are there games or are there a single game for each of you, I guess, that you look at and you're like, people need to enjoy this more. Like they didn't see it under the right light. The Zelda CDI games or CDI in general, we can kind of exclude, I think, just because of previous conversations today.
Yeah, that was going to be my answer, but we have sort of tread that ground. So, yeah, Audie, what do you think? What game hasn't got enough credit? I'm really curious to hear your answer.
Oh, man, there's so many, right? And, you know, I think revisiting retro games, there's a lot there that people now kind of look at and say they're awesome. But I think this answer is much better held up if you look at something like the PS3, Xbox 360 generation, because that's probably the generation that I had the least interest in. At that point, I was working, mostly on audio stuff and whatnot, you know, based around retro gaming already. So I didn't really partake so much in that, but at the time, there was a lot of games. It was the shift towards Metacritic, which I think was kind of a bad move, where if something didn't get over 80 on Metacritic, it got kind of discarded. And if it was Japanese developed, it also got very much kind of thrown to the side at that time, because everything was about HD graphics and Unreal Engine 2 and 3, and not so much 2, things like that. So if you look at games like 3D Da Heroes even something which was European developed, but like Lair came out on PS3 and got derided for its controls, but was patched very quickly into a fairly good game. So I think there's a lot of games there which people still haven't really tried, because either they thought that this score on a website was too instrumental to whether or not the game would be good or not, or simply the focus was so much on Western developed games during that era that a lot of Japanese developed games kind of got the front to the side. So I'd say, you know, there's no specific game other than, you know, like I said, Lair, 3D Die Heroes, 3D Die Game Heroes.
Yep, that game's incredible. It's one of my favorites.
The Puppeteer was another one at that time. I think those spring to mind that, like, people really didn't get those games didn't get a good fair shake from people. So
you know, speaking explicitly to 3D Dot Heroes, 3D Dot Game Heroes, sorry. It's just a mouthful of a title.
Yeah.
But beside that, you know, I don't think, you know, because if anyone looks that game up, they're going to see it's from Atlas. However, what many people probably don't realize is Atlas back then, you know, they did one print, maybe two, but the bare minimum run that they had to absolutely do. And then after that, that was done. They sort of walked away from it, right? I don't think that helped 3D Dot Heroes or Game Heroes much at all, just because, you know, I played the demo. I loved the demo. I was never able to find the game because it was an Atlas game from the era of them being much more choosy about what games they did more than like 10,000 prints of or what have you, right? So for games like that, I don't think it helped at all just because of that low run. You know, I know the argument for digital could or does exist and such. However, sometimes digital just didn't work in terms of like the PS3 era, where you had a small hard drive and a potentially large game that, you know, you just couldn't balance out, right?
And not only that, but I mean, the topic of digital only gaming is one that I'm fairly active in.
Yeah, you've had a few tweets about that recently. Yeah,
I sure have. And I mean, I'm all for the option of having digital, but I think the focus on digital only being the answer to everything is completely wrong. And something like 3D Die Heroes being on PS3 that has not had a re-release yet, and those stores get delisted. And they get delisted much faster than people ever will admit to. You have people who only buy digital, and that's totally fine. But there's an understanding that's lacking there of, like, we do need, like you mentioned, we do need a sufficient preservation, both physically and digitally, for these games to survive, because those storefronts, they, like, the moment it's not profitable to keep them up, which comes very quickly after a new console generation, they're gone, and those games go with it. And then, you know, either then the argument turns into like, well, not every game needs to be preserved, which yes they do, or, you know, it'll probably get re-released. It's like, probably not, you know. So
yeah, like 3D Dot Game Heroes, which, by the way, has no digital release. I'm really happy that the word of mouth was pretty strong about it before it came out, and I, you know, I bought it. I had to pre-order it so they would order a copy, and boy, I sure am happy I bought it at, I think, $30 now. Bought it back then.
Doesn't go for that anymore.
No, and it's actually a FromSoft game. It's not just an Atlus game. some people might say it's it is a FromSoft game.
No, that was FromSoft. I think only did publishing in Japan, dude.
Really?
If I remember correctly, 3D Dot Game Heroes is a Silicon Studio. Silicon Studio, they did like, what else did they do?
That is right. You are correct. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, they did
Bravely Default and stuff like that. Right? Yeah, I mean, that's what they turned into. So,
yeah.
But yeah. But you're right in the sense that, like, yes, the Japanese version was published by From.
But I mean, that's kind of how I heard of, because back then I think that's when From was blowing up, so anything attached to their name was sort of like everybody was talking about. But yeah, no, that game is excellent, and it is a great poster child for that, because it doesn't have a digital release, right? And will they re-release it? Who knows? So.
You know, that's all of that is like is I'm trying to think of the right way to put it. App? Sorry. The conversation, I should be a little better about this. The conversation towards physical versus digital. Audie, especially in your case, you know, you work produce at Limited Run. Seth, you're putting your game, or the game is coming through Limited Run.
Thank
You know,
goodness.
a studio that is a company studio. I don't know, because you know there's many different arms to it, right? But a company that has a focus on physical releases, physical re-releases in a lot of the case. And you know, I understand what you're all what you're both like. Audie, you was specifically Seth, you know, steering towards or agreeing with or what have you.
I agree with him. Physical for life.
Yeah, the I understand where you're coming from with that. And as someone that is gearing up to purchase yet another copy of Persona 3, I understand the importance of trying to have you know, an emphasis on physical releases. You know, for me, largely, I personally will only really buy digital for PC games, because I, you know, what else is there to do? Otherwise, get like a stupid little jewel case that has a CD key in it, for better or for worse, right? But when it comes to console games, I understand completely. It's just nicer in my mind to own them. And as I said, as someone who's again gearing up to purchase yet another copy of Persona 3, it's just a way to do it in a way
Ownership,
that,
right?
yes, yeah, a much harder way to revoke an ownership. Because I think like the technicality is there's still probably permissions. However, outside of someone kicking down my door and somehow damaging a cartridge or a disc or what have you, I'm probably always going to have permission to throw in a disc or what have you, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to think of what I can tag along from where we've been with this. I guess, you know, maybe to bring it full circle, talking about physicality, the physical ownership of games, Limited Run, the game that you are both part of with Arzette. I don't know, and this is on me if it has been announced, or I don't know, or you know, it might even be hush hush, and I understand completely if the answer is no, go away, we can't talk about that. However, is it safe to presume that Arzette, if I just missed it, and it hasn't, you know, it hasn't been spoken about too much or what have you, but is it safe to presume that Arzette will be getting a similar treatment with a physical setup that you can own?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we can definitely. I think as, I mean, obviously being put for limited run, there will be a physical version of the game.
So, you know, obviously that's good to know. And like as I said, I presumed it was going to, if it hadn't been announced, sorry, it was going to be one of those things where it was a very straightforward answer of yes, you can make some assumptions and then
Yeah, I
work out from
certainly
there,
hope
right?
so. Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the way that I can't really follow up on there. I'm not going to poker prod. That's not really what I do. You know, I think to maybe wrap it all up, I don't, I kind of blank there. You know, because I'm looking at the list of questions or trying to think of ways I can follow up with things, to wrap it all up. And I guess, really, I think the best way to, you know, go from here is what is it that makes gaming enjoyable to you guys? Because, you know, you've mentioned, the games that you do like. Seth, you mentioned, you know, a handful of games or genres. Mm-hmm. Audie, you as well. But like, as a whole, really, what is it that makes you sit down and say, this is what I enjoy doing? This is what I like. Like, why game? That's a weird way to phrase that. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah, Seth.
Yeah, so to me, it's the combination of all the art forms, right? Like, there, you can get the amazing music, you get beautiful art, you get the storytelling and sort of like filmic qualities. And the best part is you get to participate in all of it, right? Like, that's sort of like why video games like are such a big thing for me, you know, and if they're fun, right? Like, it's just, it's all the best parts of things that I enjoy. If it's done well, it's sort of why, you know, why I love video games, I guess, is kind of the best way I can summarize it.
I think for me, what makes video games special and enjoyable is kind of the universal language of it. And, you know, from having grown up, I was very quiet when I grew up, and it was a mutual thing I could enjoy with other people who, regardless of whether or not they were popular, loud kid, or kind of outsider, or like me, just kind of quiet as from nature. It was something that we were kind of bonded with and communicated with without having to be the same type of people. And when I started traveling and started working in the industry, whether or not I was in Japan, Brazil, or the US, you know, no matter what, how good I was with the local languages, the language of playing games were always there. And it was the same. It's the same no matter where you go. So I think, ultimately, now, when I make games, that's something that I resonate a lot towards. It's kind of the... I'm not interested in making, like, the most violent game or this or that. I just want to make a game that I know whether or not you sit down with this person or that person is just universal. I really like that aspect of video games. Because movies, everyone can like a movie, but they're specific to a genre. Mm-hmm. And gaming is also that, but it's less so. I think due to the interactive nature of it, it's much easier for people to sit down and kind of take control over the actions and the impressions that you get. So, yeah, I guess that would be my answer to that question.
So, thank you both for your answers. And I, you know, Seth, I understand completely what you're saying and how, like, you can appreciate everything coming together. You know, I'm sure we all have our own kind of gold standard for games that when we look at them, you know, we can say everything came together wonderfully and you appreciate that as like a whole hard package, right? And Audie, you know, I also understand what you're saying. It makes perfect sense. You know, as anyone that has played games with like their family at like Christmas or just at family gatherings or whatever, maybe, and I only use this analogy because it's one, it's far closer to me because I'm far less traveled than you are. But you know, like being able to sit down at a TV at Christmas and you hand like your aunt a controller to play Mario Kart or something, like instinctively you figure it out and everyone enjoys themselves, right? You have, you know, you have easily connectable memories and experiences when you meet people that are, that enjoy games, right? Like it's easy to talk about games with people in the kind of the same way that it is to like share cooking or, or something like that, right? It's a very nice connector that, you know, ties everyone together. So thank you for that as well. I understand. I think many people can relate to both of, you know, both lines of what, like, of what you said, both of your explanations, answers is the word I should have went with, sorry. But yeah, but no, thank you for both of your answers, because like I said, they make sense and easily relatable because they're just very true and close to everyone's heart, right?
Audie's was more beautiful, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Well, I think it really depends on, you know, like how you're trying to quantify it, right? And I don't think it's a good thing to quantify one person's as more beautiful or not, because like I'll use for me the crowning thing. For me, it's always Chrono Trigger, because everything about that game is, in my opinion, so masterfully packed, so masterfully done. Like it's just it's the weird gold standard of games that I don't even consider as like favorite games, because it's just kind of it's like a lofty ideal as opposed to a favorite game. I understand that's probably a weird thing to say. However, you know, the beauty of that game to me is just its own thing.
You know, it's not my favorite game, but I do think that Chrono Trigger is like a masterpiece of its era, and I can see why people hold it on a pedestal above other games, even if other big games are better or not. It's like for what it symbolizes of the 16-bit era and the RPGs, it's absolutely the best.
All the masters basically coming together of the time to sort of make like a one-off.
Yeah, I get it. If you read about the development too, it wasn't an easy thing. You know, it was something that, you know, a lot of storytelling in it, a lot of the moments that it hits comes from the experiences of creating it. And so there's a lot of sincerity in that game too.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you for adding on that. For those that don't know, it was kind of like the big names all coming together to make it. However, what, you know, where I was more leaning is like, that's Seth, with your answer, that's kind of like what I think of. And I have that, I hold that on equal grounds in terms of like how games make me feel, in the same way as your answer, Adi, where, you know, I have family and we'd all play Mario Kart at like Christmas, right? What I'm meaning is like both of those things, I don't have them competing, and I don't think they should compete, just because they're both very different things,
right,
that are equally important to hold to yourself, right? And like, it can always mean different things, different games to different people, different experiences. You know, maybe for some it's not Mario Kart, it's Smash Brothers or Monopoly or what have you. It's like the concept is what I'm meaning, is you know, holding them separately, not fighting, but like having them go hand in hand, kind of thing, as two things that stand on their own. I understand that's a little preachy and weird, and I apologize for going CDI about it that way. But yeah, Seth, Adi, as I said, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. You guys have been very generous and kept giving me more time. However, I do want to let you guys get on with your day, your Friday. I do want to let you, you know, be able to like relax and roll into the weekend on your own account or accord, without me standing in the way of it. So, you know, what I will say, that if there is anything else you two wanted to throw out there, what else you're both doing, or something you feel more people should be aware of, by all means, I'm going to give the floor over to you both as well. Please let everyone know where they can find more information about the two of you, about the game, about, you know, whatever you think people need to know about. And I'll make sure that that information is linked in the episode description.
Steph?
Oh, okay. I'll go first. I thought maybe you would want to advertise some of your stuff, but no, it's all good. So yeah, you can find me on X, Twitter, at The Dopster. I post there. You can check up on news related to RZ at RZ Game on all major social platforms. Make sure to follow Limited Run Games as well everywhere for everything related to RZ. But yeah, that's sort of what all I'm working on at the moment. And yeah, just thank you for having me and having this discussion. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well at PC98_Audi, where I post about whether or not why I work out for Limited Run or Digital Foundry or personal projects like our set. But do also check out Digital Foundry on YouTube if you want to check out some DF retro videos with me and John Lindman. And go to limitedrun.com. You can find most recently the Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection, which I was the producer of. So if you're into retro gaming, that is a compilation of the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis Jurassic Park games.
So, you know, thank you both for that. I will make sure to include all of that for you in the episode description so that people can, you know, can follow it, can follow you guys, can learn more about you guys and the projects that, well, the RZ project and more of Limited Run projects. So thank you for that. If there wasn't anything else, I will let you guys get on for your day.
That's it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome. And again, you know, thank you to both of you for Seth Wilkerson and Audie Sorley for making time to have this conversation with me. And thank you for joining us on the Red Tunic podcast, as well as a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for the use of music from the title track from Roads Deep. And be sure to check out the episode description for links to socials, websites, and other means that will allow you to learn more about or support Seth and Audie and the podcast. And while you're doing that, I'd also appreciate a like, follow, and, you know, all the other fun stuff that goes along with that. Thanks. Until next time.